Hi, my name is Karen from Kilkenny County Council Library Service, and I'm going to read an excerpt from a short story called The Greatest Gift by Philip Van Doornstern. The little town straggling up the hill was bright with coloured Christmas lights, but George Pratt did not see them. He was leaning over the railing of the iron bridge, staring down moodily at the black water. The current eddied and swirled like liquid glass, and occasionally a bit of ice, detached from the shore, would go gliding downstream to be swallowed up in the shadows under the bridge. The water looked paralysingly cold. George wondered how long a man could stay alive in it. The glassy blackness had a strange hypnotic effect on him. He leaned still further over the railing. "I wouldn't do that if I were you," a quiet voice beside him said. George turned resentfully to a little man he had never seen before. He was stout, well past middle age, and his round cheeks were pink in the winter air, as though they had just been shaved. "Wouldn't do what?" George asked suddenly. "What you are thinking of doing." "How do you know what I was thinking?" "Oh, we make it our business to know a lot of things," the stranger said easily. George wondered what the man's business was. He was a most unremarkable little person, the sort you would pass in a crowd and never notice. Unless you saw his bright blue eyes, that is. You couldn't forget them, for they were the kindest, sharpest eyes you ever saw. Nothing else about him was noteworthy. He wore a moth-eaten old fur cap and a shabby overcoat that was stretched tightly across his paunchy belly. He was carrying a small black satchel. It wasn't a doctor's bag, it was too large for that, and not the right shape. It was a salesman's sample kit, George decided distastefully. The fellow was probably some sort of peddler, the kind who would go round poking his sharp little nose into other people's affairs. "Looks like snow, doesn't it?" the stranger said, glancing up appraisingly at the overcast sky. "It'll be nice to have a white Christmas. They're getting scarce these days, but so are a lot of things." He turned to face George squarely. "You all right now?" "Of course I'm all right. What makes you think I wasn't? I..." George felt silent before the stranger's quiet gaze. The little man shook his head. "You know, you shouldn't think of such things, and on Christmas Eve of all times. You've got to consider Mary, and your mother too." George opened his mouth to ask how this stranger could know his wife's name, but the fellow anticipated him. "Don't ask me how I know such things. It's my business to know them. That's why I came along this way tonight. Lucky I did too." He glanced down at the dark water and shuddered. "Well, if you know so much about me," George said, "give me just one good reason why I should be alive." The little man made a queer chuckling sound. "Come, come, it can't be that bad. You've got your job at the bank, and Mary and the kids. You're healthy, young, and sick of everything," George cried. "I'm stuck here in this mud hole for life, doing the same dull work day after day. Other men are leading exciting lives, but I'm just a small-town bank clerk that even the army didn't want. I never did anything really useful or interesting, and it looks like as if I never will. I might just well as be dead. I might better be dead. Sometimes I wish I were. In fact, I wish I'd never been born." The little man stood looking at him in the growing darkness. "What was that you said?" he asked softly. "I said I wish I'd never been born," George repeated firmly, "and I mean it too." The stranger's pink cheeks glowed with excitement. "Why, that's wonderful. You've solved everything. I was afraid you were going to give me some trouble, but now you've got the solution yourself. You wish you'd never been born? All right, okay, you haven't." "What do you mean?" George growled. "Well, you haven't been born, just that. You haven't been born. No one here knows you. You have no responsibilities, no job, no wife, no children. Why, you haven't even have a mother. You couldn't have, of course. All your troubles are over. Your wish, I am happy to say, has been granted, officially." "Nuts," George snorted and turned away. The stranger ran after him and caught him by the arm. "You better take this with you," he said, holding out his satchel. It'll open a lot of doors that might otherwise be slammed in your face. What doors in whose face? George scoffed. I know everybody in this town. Besides, I'd like to see anybody slam a door in my face. Yes, I know, the little man said patiently, but take this anyway. It can't do any harm, and it may help. He opened the satchel and displayed a number of brushes. You'd be surprised how useful these brushes can be as an introduction, especially the free ones. These, I mean. He hauled out a plain little hairbrush. I'll show you how to use it. He thrust the satchel into George's reluctant hands and began. When the lady of the house comes to the door, you give her this and then talk fast. You say, good evening, madam. I'm from the World Cleaning Company and I want to present you with this handsome and useful brush, absolutely free. No obligation to purchase anything at all. After that, of course, it's a cinch. Now you try it. He forced the brush into George's hand. George promptly dropped the brush into the satchel and fumbled with the catch, finally closing it with an angry snap. Here, he said, and then stopped abruptly, for there was no one in sight. The little stranger must have slipped away into the bushes growing along the riverbank, George thought. He certainly wasn't going to play hide and seek with him. It was nearly dark and getting colder every minute. He shivered and turned up his coat collar. The street lights had been turned on, and Christmas candles in the windows glowed softly. The little town looked remarkably cheerful. After all, the place you grew up in was the one spot on earth where you could really feel at home. George felt a sudden burst of affection, even for crotchety old Hank Biddle, whose house he was passing. He remembered the quarrel he had had when his car had scraped a piece of bark out of Hank's big maple tree. George looked up at the vast spread of leafless branches towering over him in the darkness. The tree must have been growing there since Indian times. He felt a sudden twinge of guilt for the damage he had done. He had never stopped to inspect the wound, for he was ordinarily afraid to have Hank catch him even looking at the tree. Now he stepped out boldly into the roadway to examine the huge trunk. Hank must have repaired the scar or painted it over, for there was no sign of it. George struck a match and bent down to look more closely. He straightened up with an odd sinking feeling in his stomach. But there wasn't any scar. The bark was smooth and undamaged. He remembered what the little man at the bridge had said. It was all nonsense, of course, but the non-existent scar bothered him. When he reached the bank, he saw that something was wrong. The building was dark, and he knew he had turned the vault light on. He noticed, too, that someone had left the door windows shades up. He ran around to the front. There was a battered old sign fastened on the door. George could just make out the words. For rent or sale, apply James Silva, real estate. Perhaps it was some boy's trick, he thought wildly. Then he saw a pile of ancient leaves and tattered newspapers in the bank's ordinarily immaculate doorway. And the windows looked as though they hadn't been washed in years. A light was still burning across the street in Jim Silva's office. George dashed over and tore the door open. Jim looked up from his ledger book in surprise. What can I do for you, young man? He said in the polite voice he reserved for potential customers. The bank, George said breathlessly. What's the matter with it? The old bank building. Jim Silver turned around and looked out the window. Nothing that I can see. Wouldn't like to rent or buy it, would you? You mean it's out of business? For a good 10 years. Went bust. Strange around these parts, ain't you? George sagged against the building. I was here some time ago, he said weakly. I even knew some of the people who worked there. Didn't you know a fellow named Marty Jenkins, did you? Marty Jenkins? Why, he... George was about to say that Marty had never worked at the bank. Couldn't have. In fact, for when they both left school, they had applied for a job there, and George had gotten it. But now, of course, things were different. You would have to be careful. No, I didn't know him, he said slowly. Not really, that is. I'd heard of him. Well, then maybe you'd heard how he skipped out with $50,000. That's why the bank went broke. Pretty near ruined everyone around here. Silva was looking at him sharply. I was hoping for a minute maybe you'd know where he is. I lost plenty in that crash myself. We'd like to get our hands on Marty Jenkins. Didn't he have a brother? Seems to me he had a brother named Arthur. Art? Oh, sure. But he's all right. He didn't know where his brother went. It's had a terrible effect on him, too. Took to drink, he did. It's too bad, and hard on his wife. He married a nice girl. George felt the sinking feeling in his stomach again. Who did he marry? He demanded hoarsely. Both he and Art had courted Mary. Girl named Mary Thatcher, Silva said cheerfully. She lives up on the hill just this side of the church. Hey, where are you going? But George had bolted out of the office. He ran past the empty bank building and turned up for the hill. For a moment he thought of going straight to Mary. The house next to the church had been given them by her father as a wedding present. Naturally, Art Jenkins would have gotten it if he'd married Mary. George wondered whether they had any children. Then he knew he couldn't face Mary. Not yet, anyway. He decided to visit his parents and find out more about her. There were candles burning in the windows of the little weather-beaten house on the side street, and a Christmas wreath was hanging on the glass panel of the front door. George raised the gate latch with a loud click. A dark shape on the porch jumped up and began to growl. Then it hurled itself down the steps, barking ferociously. Brownie, George shouted. Brownie, you old fool, stop that. Don't you know me? But the dog advanced menacingly and drove him back behind the gate. The porch light snapped on, and George's father stepped outside to call the dog off. The barking subsided to a low, angry growl. His father held the dog by the collar, while George cautiously walked past. He could see that his father did not know him. "Is the lady of the house in?" he asked. His father waved toward the door. "Go on in," he said cordially. "I'll chain this dog up. She can be mean with strangers." His mother, who was waiting in the hallway, obviously did not recognize him. George opened his sample kit and grabbed the first brush that came to hand. "Good evening, ma'am," he said politely. "I'm from the World Cleaning Company. We're giving out a free sample brush. I thought you might like to have one." No obligation at all. His voice faltered. His mother smiled at his awkwardness. "I suppose you'll want to sell me something." "I'm not really sure I need any brushes." "No, ma'am, I'm not selling anything," he assured her. "The regular salesman will be round in a few days. This is just a Christmas present from the company." "How nice," she said. "You people never gave away such good brushes before." "This is a special offer," he said. His father entered the hall and closed the door. "Won't you come in for a while and sit down?" his mother said. "You must be tired walking so much." "Thank you, ma'am. I don't mind if I do." He entered the little parlour and put his bag down on the floor. The room looked different somehow, although he could not figure out why. "I used to know this town pretty well," he said, to make conversation. "Knew some of the townspeople. I remember a girl named Mary Thatcher. She married Art Jenkins, I heard. You must know them." "Of course," his mother said. "We know Mary well." "Any children?" he asked casually. 2, a boy and a girl." George sighed audibly. "My, you must be tired," his mother said. "Perhaps I can get you a cup of tea." "No, ma'am, don't bother," he said. "I'll be having supper soon." He looked around the little parlour, trying to find out why it looked different. Over the mantelpiece hung a framed photograph, which had been taken on his kid brother's Harry's 16th birthday. He remembered how they had gone to Potter's studio to be photographed together. There was something queer about the picture. It showed only one figure, Harry's. "That your son?" he asked. His mother's face clouded. She nodded but said nothing. "I think I met him too," George said hesitantly. "His name's Harry, isn't it?" His mother turned away, making a strange choking noise in her throat. Her husband put his arm clumsily around her shoulder. His voice, which was always mild and gentle, suddenly became harsh. "You couldn't have met him," he said. "He's been dead a long time. He was drowned the day that picture was taken." George's mind flew back to that long ago August afternoon when he and Harry had visited Potter's studio. On their way home, they'd gone swimming. Harry had been seized with a cramp, he remembered. He had pulled him out of the water and had thought nothing of it. But suppose he hadn't been there? "I'm sorry," he said miserably. "I guess I better go. I hope you like the brush. And I wish you both a very Merry Christmas." There, he'd put his foot in it again, wishing them a Merry Christmas when they were thinking about their dead son.